Welcome to Emotional Sobriety.
Do you guys realize that we're a quarter of the century into this century?
That's the first I've thought about it that way, but that's so...
We're a fourth of the way through the next century.
And it's going great.
According to whom?
Yeah, no notes. It's perfect.
That reminds me of the ad I put out on my Instagram, was the comedy stylings of Berger and Rutledge. We should say the comedy stylings of Patrick. It's like, you know, it's like, how's it going? Oh, great.
First thing of the day to kind of humble me. You know, my dad's been getting up. He gets up around this time. It's a little earlier than me. Anyway, he's been going in for his radiation. And he's got, yeah. I don't know, when you were going, I don't know if you had one of those printout calendars with like the X's that you put through each day that you do it.
I had a wall calendar that I did that. Yeah.
Oh my God. Just the fucking looking at that. And he realized that he was just about halfway through now. Cause you know, he has to drive kind of a distance to go do it. And then the protocols for doing it, you know, just having to keep his bladder full and just all that stuff is just like, He just told me this morning, he's like, God, this sucks. Yeah. I just want it to be over.
Well, it's I was amazed when some of the people that were doing my treatment told me that a good number of people quit while they're going through it. I go like, whoosh. I mean, I can understand how you would want to.
Your oncologist told you that?
The guys who were doing the radiation treatment. He'd go 5 days a week?
Yes.
Yeah, I sat in the waiting room every morning with all these people that I, you know, you get to know who they are, you're just seeing them, and it's like, and they came from various distances, some of them from 2 hours away. I've thought about people like, where's your dad? It's like, it's so much more of a deal just in your time, in your day. You know, for me, it was 7 o'clock in the morning. So I, even while I was still working, I stopped working after a while, but while I was still working, it just was, you know, I had to get up an hour early and get in here and get radiated. And then I was done. So he's halfway through.
Halfway through, which is a victory and that is progress. But I have to think that if you're in the middle of doing it, you know, you want it to be tomorrow that it's over, or, you know, that it's, I don't know. I guess one way to look at it, it's like you're training for something, you know, that's a process where it's going to have to be every day for a long time.
When the radiation treatment is over, the radiation keeps working. So they kept telling me I'm going to feel worse, you know, worse and worse. And I thought I thought when I finished the treatment, that would be at the worst I was going to feel. It's like, nowhere near. And I had people who just validated that for me, which made it fine. Cause I was going like, oh my God, they go, nope, this is normal. This is normal. They would even say, how long since your last treatment? And I would go like, it's been 3 weeks. And they go, oh, you got a ways to go.
Yeah. I love the guy. It's you know, Alan, one of the defining chapters of his life was losing his dad. And even as so late in life, he thinks about how his dad's not around. And I had my dad around for my whole life. And, oh God, I hate feeling things intensely. It's real uncomfortable.
Do you think that's true? What you just said, that you hate feeling things intensely?
I have a real thing about crying. I don't like,
okay.
It's,
of course, it begs the question that do you hate it intensely?
Maybe some kind of internalized men don't cry type thing.
Your dad's not a guy like men don't cry, is he?
Well, his dad was. Maybe he kind of, in a moment of weakness, he passed along some of that to me.
Well, maybe. But your dad, that's not your dad, though, to you. I mean, you wouldn't say, oh, no, my dad would judge me if I was crying.
No, he wouldn't. But it's, I don't know. I think I'm uncomfortable with the idea of just with that degree of vulnerability, I guess. Just to name an example, like, okay, so Alan, when you were going through a really rough year about a year ago, and you would cry about it. Like, I would have a secret envy of you because you were able to let yourself feel those things and kind of go through that purging, you know, of all the bad stuff you were going through. And I'm scared of giving myself to that process because, and I know that if I feel like if you weren't crying through those moments, Alan, I think that that would be truly worrisome. So I think, you know, that's crying is a sign, right? That your emotions are kind of like, there's some functioning going on there.
It depends on the person. And one of the things that was very clear with Alan with that is that's very natural. We're just trying to be congruent with nature, and everybody's not going to cry as easily as maybe Alan does or I do, but it's like, so if you don't know, you don't need to make yourself cry. But if, you know, if you, cause you said, you know, people let themselves cry. And I suggested you ask them how many of them let themselves cry and how many of them would say, I really can't help it.
I was going to ask you about this, Tom. My girlfriend is mad at me currently. I have trouble thinking and doing things when my closest person is crossed up with me and I've exhausted all the possibilities I can think of to get her to feel differently in a way that would get me to feel differently. And as you can tell right off the bat, there's some a lot of emotional dependency nested in all that.
I've always been, and I tend to think women do a better job of this in general, but I know Dee Dee does a better job of this than I do, of what I call healthy compartmentalizing. You know, just to basically, we're having a hard time, you know, she can go about and we can still have a nice, you know, we can have a nice breakfast. We can, you know, watch a TV show and stuff like that. We're going to get back to this stuff like that. And I'm much better than I used to be, but what I used to do, everything stopped. If my girlfriend or my wife was mad at me, it's like, I mean, everything just halt. Nothing's going to change. And I'm not going to do anything until I get this taken care of. I mean, and that is absolutely dependency in that way. So it's like, so part of that is practicing that, you know, that, cause, and it's part of that is trusting her and trusting your relationship that it's okay. You're going to get back to this, you know? And if you're not clear on that, if you're not clear on that, then that's a good thing to have about just, that's one of the reasons I give people like those little seven tools of communication, stuff like that, because you kind of need to know basically what you guys have agreed to, which is one of the things that most of us have a agreement is basically if we leave something unresolved, we're going to get back to it. You know, because we don't, you know, I mean, otherwise we've all got at least one person in the relationship who it would be me in a lot of ways would gladly sweep something under the rug. And doesn't matter how lumpy the rug is, we're going to ignore it. But so it's good for us to know that we're going to get back to shit like that. But it's, you know, it's okay to ask her to say, you know, hell, we were talking about on the podcast just about this in general. It's like, you know, this is my understanding that we'll get back to this. Is that I just want to ask you if that's your understanding too.
What you're sharing, Patrick, and I felt it, and Tom's even relating to it too, is we've all felt the anxiety when we're out of sync with our partner because they're upset with us. Because it brings up the basic anxiety we all have. Am I going to be loved and accepted? You know, are they going to still want me? Are they going to reject me? And that's a powerful force, right? It gets us to develop a false self. I mean, it's that powerful. And so it's very important. See, as we talk about emotional sobriety, and I wanted to bring this into the discussion, it seems apropos now, is we need to distinguish and to differentiate an active response from a reactive response. When we are reactive, we're reacting off of our anxiety. And now we're doing things to try to calm ourselves and soothe ourselves, and usually in ways that aren't going to calm us and soothe us, unfortunately. But we've learned, we've all got a lot of bad habits around this stuff, right? Now, we don't know how to engage our anxiety in a way that helps us stay grounded and centered. Because, see, that's what you're talking about, is that her being upset with you has knocked you off your center of gravity. You know, and I felt that. Listen, that happens in my relationships. And it happens with my children at times. I mean, it happens in my life, even with my friends at times. We're all going to go through that. The issue is not whether or not we're vulnerable to that. We are. That vulnerability doesn't mean something's wrong. It does say something's needed. And what's needed is we got to add more self to the situation. So we've got to find a way to get to that place. I'm okay even if they're upset with me right now. That's what Tom was saying a minute ago. I can be okay. There can be room in this relationship for them to be upset with me. And you know, even if it goes, well, what? God, what if their upset turns into a total dissolution of the relationship? Well, okay, then that can't be helped. I mean, if I'm showing up in the best way I can, right, and bringing the best of myself to the relationship, I can't, and that can't be helped, then we just, that's where grief comes in. That's okay. And to know that even though, like you guys seen what I've gone through, my whole life blew up. And it's coming back together. I'm Humpty Dumpty putting one piece back together at a time. And another piece falls off. And you know, and it's not like there aren't things to cry about. I still can cry about those things. But, you know, because of the support I got from you guys and the other work I'm doing, I'm able to find my way through a very, very difficult 2 years. It's not over. It's far from over. I'm still dealing with the fallout of that. It's really damaged my 11-year-old daughter. I mean, she's really, really suffering terribly from this. And unfortunately, I've made some mistakes and Jess has made some mistakes around that. And we're hopefully going to get those things cleaned up now as we're really taking a look at the dark reality of it. But man, it's life is in session.
There's some things I want to say compared to what you said, because you're talking about, because whenever you, I love your thing about add more self, but in this particular case, it begs the question to me immediately. It's like, okay, in this, since we're talking about a specific thing and we're using Patrick's as an example, it's like, what does that mean? How do we do that? And it's like, you know, and you know, the place I go to is basically, and it's exactly what you said. You put it in better words than I was thinking it, Alan, is emotions are just communication. That's all they are. All emotions are communication, and they tell you something about that you need to know. And what they're telling us about is exactly what Alan said, what we need. If we think in those terms, if we frame it in those terms instead of what's wrong, but what do we need? What do I need right now? Because, you know, if you're, you know, I wrote the book about the fear. If you have fear, rather than criticize yourself for having fear, realize that fear is like hunger for reassurance. It's like, you just need some reassurance. Now, the thing we're not adept at doing so much is we need support from other people, but we also need to be able to reassure ourselves. Like Alan talks about, comfort ourselves. It's like we have to have that stronger. Adding more self to me is that adult recovery self in there that basically is able to come in and say to you something along the lines of what Patrick, what Alan is saying, which is you say, because that's like, okay, what if this doesn't get better? Okay. Well, you need a part of you too. That doesn't mean it's going to feel good. You just go like, okay, if it doesn't get better, it doesn't get better, and you're going to be able to handle it. See, because that's the next piece. You're not thinking it out loud, but you're not thinking it maybe even consciously. I won't be able to survive it.
Age has made that a lot easier, because I did used to think that I couldn't survive my disappointments and, you know, the different hurts, but clearly, I have.
I even put it into word. I even used to say that I thought I was going to disintegrate, you know, in the midst of things like that. It's like that's talk about extreme dependency. But the idea, you know, in the ultimate reassurance I put in embracing fear is when you state the threat. The ultimate reassurance is you basically look that fear right in the eye and go like, I'm willing to risk it.
When things are going poorly in my different individual relationships, I think before I got sober and I developed this amazing fellowship, not just in 12-step groups, but, you know, through guys like you and through the podcast and all kinds of like different recovery adjacent things, like I didn't have a refuge that I know would be able to, like, you know, help me and, you know, kind of get me over the hump, you know, of whatever pain I was going through. Now I know there's a place to go. I know that, like, you know, if everything goes to shit in my in my relationships, there's gonna be other kind of loving connections that I have that are gonna be able to sustain me, you know, while I get through the rough stuff. And
what comes to my mind is with your hand gestures is you got people to catch you. You know, you got a place to fall, and it's like you keep putting your hands out like that. And I just imagine and I've done this experientially in workshops, and I'm sure Alan has too. Been on both being caught and being the catcher, being among the catchers. It's like I remember one piece of work I did with every it was a big giant group, and every man in the group formed this giant blob of men, and I got to just run fast as I wanted to and just dive into them. You know, it was cool. That's in my body to this very day. I can feel it when I say it. And what they did is they had a space, and then they just engulfed me and then, you know, hugged me and then tickled me. It's like we were just playing. It's like it was just it was amazing, but it was a place to fall. Yeah, we all need it.
I guess my tip for the week is related to that. You know, we can befriend any of our emotions and use them, continue our development and growth along these lines of emotional sobriety. So, you know, over and over again, we say trouble doesn't mean something's wrong. Anxiety doesn't mean you're pathological. You're a human, being. And being human means that we experience these things. And it's not that the experience of these things is the issue. It's our relationship to the experience and what it means. And so that's where, you know, what we say over and over again here is don't let the experience you're having claim you, meaning don't become reactive to it. You know, try to claim the experience, which means live in the pause between the stimulus and our reactive response. And if you could live in the pause, you can find an active response. And in that response is your choice. And when you have choice is when you start to develop emotional sobriety. That's when we feel the power, man. That's when we're able to weigh in and throw our weight on one option over another in terms of our response and try it on. Once again, it doesn't mean we're always going to hit the right thing that's going to help us deal with it. But if we approach these things, as Tom and I like to say, as an experiment, try something else, man. Don't get stuck and throw in the towel just because you tried a couple things. And if you don't know anything else to try, that's when you call somebody else and say, hey, man, I'm stuck. You know, this is what I'm doing to deal with it. Do you have any other ideas? And sometimes by just exploring new possibilities, and we can discover a response that's going to help us recover our center of gravity. It's like, you'll be okay no matter what happens with your relationship.
Yeah, I'm going to be okay. Yeah. And by the way, you guys have inspired a brand new nutshell that I just wrote, which is emotions are not the problem. They are part of the solution.
There it is. There's the tip for the week. Great job, Tom. I love how you do
it. It was a joint effort that time. But love you guys.
Tend your life. Tend your myth. Cultivate your narrative with whomever you are.